The Devil's Advocates radio show is broadcast under a time brokerage agreement between Devil Radio and Civic Media, Inc. Some portions of this program may be pre-recorded. Warning! You're about to listen to the greatest radio show ever, and due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Now live from the Civic Media Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning, welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
And now, here's your hosts, Dom and Kroot.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates radio show, 420 Eve. The Burn It Down Friday edition. Welcome to it. Welcome to it, Rich. Gonna need you to lightly screen the phone calls today. And we're gonna take calls from the top right away. Something I don't usually do, but today is your day. I'll get there in a minute. 844-967-2789. So listen close. I'm gonna need your engagement. We've got some fine guests on this big program, the 420 Eve edition, as mentioned, and I've got a fine guest, our sponsor partner, Ellen Robinson from over at Herbal Aspect. You can get the Devil products at Devil Radio at herbalaspect.com. Radio code Devil Radio. Anyways, our buddy Ellen Robinson, there is a lot of information in the Journal Sentinel, some articles, some coverage of the industry he works in. And, you know, we're going to talk about it. Some in-depth coverage at the Journal Sentinel and, the industry side of it, at least from Ellen Robinson's perspective. Today, probably going to do it at 4:30 today, because this will be a little bit of a longer conversation, if you will. And also, Peter Barca. I told you, Peter, our buddy. Former congressman, will he be a congressman, Peter Barca, again? He has made his announcement. He's running in the first CD, great state of Wisconsin, and he's joining what some say is the greatest radio show ever today in the 5 o'clock happier happy hour. So we hope you stick around for Peter. We're certainly going to talk some politics today. But something jumped right out at me, and this is what I want to talk about. First and foremost, they have impaneled a jury in the Donald Trump, in the New York hush money trial. And they have also apparently got their full complement of alternative jurors, 18 in total, my math says. So Monday morning, opening statement should occur. And as Juan Merchan was in the courtroom in New York City, and he was making this announcement, outside something serious was happening. A guy was out there catching himself on fire. Self-immolation, I think they call this. And my understanding, you know, it smelled terrible. It smelled the burning flesh. This guy doused himself and caught himself on fire. Trumpster fire? Question mark? Probably not. Here's the coverage from the Washington Post. Here's the first coverage I've seen, and I did tune to the cable news, but this was immediately outside the hush money courthouse in New York City, this being covered as part of the trial coverage. Julie Berman, 56, a Manhattan resident who came to the plaza to photograph protesters, saw the man set himself on fire. He had a sign saying something about Trump and Biden working together to orchestrate a coup, she said, and another one alleging some kind of Ponzi scheme. You know, Ron Johnson comes immediately to mind, but I'm pretty sure it wasn't the senator. She said he told her to get back and then doused himself with a liquid, threw some flyers in the air, then doused himself again before flicking a lighter and lighting himself on fire. She said she was about 15 feet away. Wow, that got serious. That escalated very quickly, didn't it? So, I want to talk about it from this perspective. Maybe I've been watching too much Shogun. Shogun, this early Japanese 16th century setting. And there's a lot of ritualistic suicide. And I've been watching this show, and it's forced me to consider, you know, the future is unknown for any of us. In most cases, I don't know if I'm going to get hit by a truck on the way up to the cabin this weekend. I'm not rooting for it. Going to try and dodge all the trucks. But you don't know what life's going to throw at you. And in the Shogun, this early Japanese culture, very ritualistic, and people took control of their own deaths effectively. They could have meaning not just in life, but also in death through this process, this ritualistic suicide. And when I heard this story, it immediately, you know, in confession, I also listened to and watched the Game of Thrones on the HBO Dragons. A lot of people get burnt in that show. I'll just say it. Maybe I've been a little anesthetized to this concept that people get burnt, because that doesn't happen much outside of war zones. But my immediate thought when I heard this story and I started thinking was, well, this is not a tragedy per se. I mean, from this guy's point of view, this is mission accomplished. And I'm not trying to make light of suicide. Certainly there are people that are struggling out there in the world. And, you know, those people need help. But this is not purely an act of suicide. Certainly it wasn't. This was an act outside the courtroom of Donald Trump. This was an act of publicity. This guy wanted his dying act to be something to be remembered. It was an act of control in some way, shape, or form. Didn't harm anyone per se, except himself, of course. And those that might have witnessed it, I suspect there might be some PTSD amongst the journalists that were dispatched there to cover the Trump trial inside. Got stuck doing the outdoor duty, the live hits from outdoors, you know, out in front of the courthouse. So here's the question. What would you die for? I mean, if you could choose, is there anything so important to you in your life that you would die for it? Or at least you would be willing to theoretically make that sacrifice? I would wonder. I'd like to hear from you. 844-967-2789. Now, I joined the Army. And, you know, we all think about family, of course. Well, would I die for my lovely Mrs. Crudy? You know, theoretically, certainly I would. If a bear's coming at us, you know, I better stick my ass between the bear and her. At least give her a fighting chance of getting away. She could outrun me anyway. So if a bear's coming, Crudy's going to get his ass eaten. But anyways, spouse, certainly. I'd like to think I'd make the ultimate sacrifice for my children. Now, I don't still have parents, but I understand those. Well, I guess technically I got a DNA daddy, but Chuck, I'm not throwing myself on any life or death circumstances to save your ass at this point. My understanding is you voted for Trump at least twice. So, you know, you understand, Chuck. I'm not killing myself for you. Not letting that happen. But I could understand if someone had a better relationship, maybe a lifelong relationship with their parents, where they might feel that way. Maybe as a younger person, as a child, I'd feel that way about my mama. I did join the Army once upon a time. You know, the whole duty, honor, country. I thought I was being patriotic. I was also struggling in college at the time. You know, it was something of a financial effort, offset some of the student loans I had already acquired. Supposed to get some student loan reimbursement. $5,000 seemed like a lot of money then. Never got even that, but that's a different story for a different day. But I joined the Army with the thought process because Iraq had invaded Kuwait just 8 days earlier. And I was struggling in school and I was looking for a path. And I thought this patriotic urge I felt to do something, you know, maybe at the sacrifice of my own life or limb. You know, I thought I was willing to make that sacrifice. And I needed the college money, quite frankly. I was not a rich kid. Grew up as a ward of the state of Wisconsin. Needed that money. So I thought perhaps serving the country was a good enough reason. Good enough reason for me. I joined the Army. I felt quite fortunate. I didn't find myself put in harm's way. Not any greater harm's way than anyone else that went through the U.S. military boot camp. You know, I nearly got my ass kicked a couple times, but I was a big kid. I took care of myself. But is there anything worth dying for out there in this world? Politically, can you imagine dying for your politics? I mean, in this divided country we live in, would you die for Joe Biden? How about Donald Trump? Would you die for Trump? I'm just wondering, do you feel that strongly in your core? I mean, if would you go join the army and go serve if this stuff in the Middle East blew up into World War III, or at least a ground war in the Middle East? You know, Persian Gulf 3.0? Would you go serve? Do you feel that strongly? Is there anything you would feel that strongly about that you would be willing to consider sacrificing your life for it? And there's another question. Burn it down. Too soon? I mean, really. Am I crossing lines here with the Burn It Down Friday edition? This guy burnt himself to death. But again, I don't see this as a suicide. I see this as a mission accomplished. He went out, the ultimate form of control. He burned it down just the way he wanted to. You know, when we go out in this world, don't we all want that control? Don't we all want to, better to burn out than fade away, right? So I'd like to know, is there anything you would be considerate, theoretically or otherwise, of sacrificing your life for, life or limb? 844-967-2789. Also, am I insulting your sensibilities with the Burn It Down Friday edition? Am I going a little too far, too fast, too soon? I hope so. Then it would be mission accomplished for me.
The Devil's Advocate.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. We do it all for you here at Devil Radio. This little endeavor. Now, when I've been doing this 13 years, and there'll be a little change coming on Monday. Dom will start joining us in the 3 o'clock hour. And I know that is the preferred version of the Devil's Advocates. I know you like it better when Dom's here. I read the text. It's a little hurtful. Jeff from Shorewood, you specifically, you're always a little hurtful because you didn't have to listen to me for the first hour. But to listen and then complain about listening to me for the first hour and saying, I can't. Oh, thank God Dom's now joined. I've been listening to this painful hour. You always, Jeff, could have turned me off for a bit. But Dom will start joining in the 3 o'clock hour. He's been decluttering his professional life. And I appreciate him doing so because the 3 hours, that feels right for us. And then Monday at 3, Dom will join, and we'll do our, you know, our show here on WMDX, and then the national show we do from 4 to 6. And then Tuesday, a well-deserved day off for our buddy Dominic. I know. And Rich, it makes me ponder. Do I want to take a day off as well? And Rich, I realize I would take a day off. I would. But I feel like we owe a live show to the audience. And in light of the fact the Donald Trump, the former president, will be on trial by then, seems like we owe it to him. We owe him a show.
Well, you're stirring the drink and you're the boss and you make the call. And if you need me here, I'll show up.
Well, let's assume we're working
okay
all days next week.
All right.
I think we want to. I think it's important. You know, I'm a little disappointed in quite frankly, if you can hear the sound of my voice right now and your boss is not staring at you at this moment, I'm a little hurt. There's nothing you wouldn't die for. Devil's advocates, would you die for us? I would die for cherry pie. I'm just saying it. I probably will. The diabetes will probably get me eventually. 844-967-2789. Other actual stories. Now I'm going to give you a little fact-checking. Corporate wokeness. You know, the right doesn't like the corporate wokeness. Any implication that some corporation might see the value of diversity, inclusion, things like that. You know how it bothers them. Hell, they held the entire UW system hostage here in the state of Wisconsin over it. But over at the Journal Sentinel, there is a little fact check. Kohl's Corporation. The question and the statement made to stakeholders, stockholders specifically, is that they were giving money to Black Lives Matter. Not a little, but fairly a lot. $1 million to Black Lives Matter. And there has been a fact check. And did the Kohl's Corporation give the very woke $1 million donation to Black Lives Matter? The short answer is no, they did not. In 2020, the murder of George Floyd sparked social unrest that captured the country's attention. And major corporations looked inward to see what they could do to improve racial disparities. Now, the Wisconsin-based Kohl's Corp, that's where Scott Walker used to get all his sweaters. You know, by the time Tonette pulled the Kohl's cash out of her purse, hell, they were paying him to buy that sweater. Or so he would tell the story. But the Wisconsin-based Kohl's Corporation is under scrutiny by an activist investor related to donations it pledged back in 2020. The National Center for Public Policy Research, based in D.C., filed a proposal for shareholders to vote on creating a committee that would review the company's policy positions, advocacy, partnership, and charitable giving on social and political matters, and the effect of those actions on the company's financial sustainability. Now, what's that all about, right? The National Center for Public Policy is a conservative group that invests in companies and files proposals to achieve goals by reducing activity related to, let's call it, diversity, equity, inclusion, race, gender, and LGBTQ issues. In its pitch to the Kohl's shareholders, the center stated, according to the Claremont Institute, BLM, Black Lives Matter, funding database, Kohl's has contributed $1 million to the BLM movement and related causes since 2020. As the PolitiFact notes, in the proposal, the phrase related causes is vague and does not elaborate as to what other causes are. So we'll stick to the one mentioned. Did the company donate to Black Lives Matter? And again, the short answer, no, they didn't. Kohl's did make donations to nonprofits, and within the proposal, the National Center for Public Policy Research links to a database from the Claremont Institute Center for the American Way of Life, a conservative organization that, according to its website, tries to fight the left's central doctrine, identity politics. Well, in this case, mostly by lying to the corporate stockholders. It claims a search of the organization's database showed Kohl's contributing $1 million to Black Lives Matter, and it includes a link to a Kohl's press release. So it looks correct, but once you start reading deeper, In the news release, the retailer says it's contributing $1 million to five Milwaukee area nonprofit organizations. They include the Greater Milwaukee Urban League, Employ Milwaukee, Axe Housing, Safe and Sound, and the Boys and Girls Club of Greater Milwaukee. None of these are Black Lives Matters. In the proxy statement, Kohl's is recommending shareholders vote against the proposal. In an interview with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Stephen Padfield, he's the deputy director of the Free Enterprise Project at the, you know, the public policy research, the righty firm making a stink about this. He claims, we don't have the resources to dig down layer after layer for every proposition. So when we have a reputable organization like Claremont, and they put out this information, we do a couple of checks and it seems very reasonable, then we find that's appropriate to use as a basis amongst the many other issues that we cite that are seemingly related to this sort of left-leaning, what seems like left-leaning agenda that Kohl's is supporting. So they made this claim to the investors. We need a committee, maybe a blue ribbon committee. We need to investigate. Because Kohl's, it's all woke, and we're anti-woke. We don't like the woke. But here's the point. Kohl's did not give the money. And when refuted with the direct facts, Padfield didn't change his tune. This organization has chosen to stay with the lie, and they are going to continue to make the lie to the stockholders of the Kohl's Corporation. Because God forbid, Kohl's might sell Scott Walker a diverse sweater. And they wouldn't like that. And you know, deep down, Scott Walker wouldn't like that either. He's always been against the DEI. Woker or not, he's always been a little sleepy. Come back, the Burn It Down Friday edition. You're not playing along. I don't like that. 844-967-2789. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Friday edition. Nobody calling. Lots of people texting. I appreciate that. There is communication going on. There is engagement. But you all like to save your calls for the Dom and Crudy hours. I know how it goes. It bothers me just a little bit to know you're listening, but you won't call. You won't. Here. Is what some of you are saying. Apparently the boss watching each and every one of you, you're not calling, you're texting in. First and foremost, Robert from McFarland informs us someone lit themselves on fire outside the courthouse for Trump's trial. I was aware of that. Hence the Burn It Down Friday edition. It's a theme. Some will be offended. You know, I'm crossing a few lines. I understand that, but I see this as mission accomplished for this guy. But anyways, I already touched on that. If you weren't here for that, I'm sorry you missed it. I see someone calling. I appreciate that. 844-967-2789. The Chuckster from Racine also informing me. He sees that the New York Attorney General says Trump's bond company lacks the ability to cover a civil fraud-based bond. And Monday, they'll cover that hearing. And if he can't put the money, his assets will be seized. Well, we'll see if that's true. I had asked the question, would you die for anyone? This guy obviously sacrificed himself for some cause. Now, it might be mental illness, ultimately, but I am being informed he is not yet dead. He has not passed away. I think that's a matter of timing, folks. But anyways, some have said Crudy has got it wrong. He's not departed. Jeff from Shorewood tells me, I'd die for my brother and sister, couple of friends. No way for political beliefs. And Mike, I think I saw that the nut job who lit himself up was still alive, costing the taxpayers tons of money. That might be true. And then Jeff sort of bitch slaps me. He continues on the text line. And why I read this sort of drivel, I'll never know, Jeff, but here's what you also wrote. Oh, Crudy, come on down off the cross. Someone else needs the wood. You know I love you. It's just that Dom lightens up the show. Yes, I've noted. You never call when it's just us, Jeff. Never. Steady Eddie says, Crudy, you're hitting 370 Hall of Fame numbers. If you batted cleanup for the Brewers, 37% of the time, you're right every time. He also corrects me that the last time he had heard, the man who set himself on fire was in critical condition, not dead. I have not confirmed Steady Eddie, and I'm not at the hospital. So shame on me for making that false allegation. I don't know. I think that could be a matter of timing. It seemed pretty substantial, the flames I had seen. If they survive, it would be, quote-unquote, a miracle. 844-967-2789. That number works for text and phone calls. Who's your Bob? You're the best one in the whole class today, who's your Bob? I was feeling lonely because nobody's calling, and here you are. Welcome.
Well, hey, Crudy, how are you?
Good. Would you die for me, Bob? Is there something you would die for?
Well, I'm here to do a mercy killing on your pleading. Sure. But I was seriously thinking about this question. You know, I didn't want to be flip or comic about it.
Yeah.
I've been in the situation of, you know, you run into a burning building or you run into a firefight. What happens? It's spur of the moment, split second decision, go or stay. You don't have time to plan it out.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have time to go through the list of people I know and go, well, you're dead. You're dead. You're dead. Oh, I'll save you, but you're dead. No, you don't have that time. I think it's an unfair question.
I've been unfair with you, Bob. Well, are there things that you know, like you've been in the military, Bob? Do I take that from your answer?
Correct.
And firefights, Bob, that was in the military context?
Military and civilian law enforcement.
Okay. Bob, is it just the life circumstance? It was part of the job. Why would you put yourself in that circumstance, sir?
Well, when a building's burning down and there's people in it, you go.
Yeah.
When your job is to go from here to way over there, and there's people that don't like you in the way, well, I'm sorry. You gotta go, dude.
Yeah.
You know?
What branch did you serve in, Hoosier Bob?
Oh, I was in the Air Force to start with, and then I went to another place.
Okay. Appreciate your call, Bob. 844-967-2789. Please be polite when you call in. Keep it clean. Some people ask me, not a lot, but some people wonder, you know, who influences Crudy? And not just comedians. I do like the comedy. I do like the comedians. But there is someone who is sort of a thought provoker for me. And I'd like to introduce you to a few of her thoughts in regards to the Trump trial upcoming. This is a co-written article. The one I'm really impressed by is Anat Shenker Osorio. I've sat through some some video calls with her and some informational stuff. And I love the way this lady thinks. She also wrote this with Dahlia Lithwick. And the headline, the Trump trial is already influencing public opinion in big ways. 4 days in, with the jury just selected, those in the, you know, commentariat class, that's a made-up word, but I feel like I'm one of them, are already ready to offer their closing argument in Donald Trump's New York criminal trial. Most of the naysayers are lawyers. Some of them doubt that Trump will be found guilty of even a misdemeanor, much less a felony, for his alleged crime of illegally offering hush money payments to hide an affair he had before the 2016 presidential election. They question the soundness of what they deem a rather novel legal theory, elevating the minor crime of falsifying records into a more serious charge of doing so in furtherance of another crime. Others are just exhausted. Our Slate colleague, Richard Hansen, in the LA Times declared, "I've had a hard time even mustering a meh. It's understandable to feel jaded by what has been a years-long process, with Trump seeming to evade accountability every time. But missing this case is precisely the category error that holds that what lawyers believe about legal verdicts is somehow predictive of political and electoral outcomes. And it's not just the lawyers. The pundits are also certain they know how the public will think about a trial that's barely begun. They're sure they understand how it will affect a vote that remains 200 days away. And they are bringing in survey data to back up their claims." ABC News thus declared, "The polls suggest that a guilty verdict would be unlikely to have a big influence come November, citing as evidence the fact that just 35% of independents and 14% of Republicans believe that Trump is guilty in the New York criminal case. As further proof that the Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg's efforts are going to be electorally inconsequential, they go on to reference a Quinnipiac poll showing that only 29% of voters would be less likely to support Trump upon a conviction in this criminal trial." And sure, all of these are in fact numbers, and they are indeed less than the 50%. Yes, we've been told many, many times that it takes plus one to win an election. But this is where so many political analysts have either memory hold how presidential elections actually work in the U.S. or are demonstrating the motivated cognition is one hell of a drug. Because for Trump to lose this election, it does not require over 50% of the people to say that this trial would flip their vote. Many people are absolutely determined not to vote for the criminal defendant. As in 16 and 2020, the 2024 election will come down to the margins of 1 or 2% in just six states. Think Wisconsin, folks. I'm just throwing it out there. And this game of winner takes all, even by a hair, dropping only 9% of the base upon a Bragg conviction as the most Trump favorable poll testing stakes of this case reports, means you lose the election. Did you get all that, folks? You don't have to move 50% of the electorate. You just got to convince a small percentage, because it really just comes down to the swing states and a small percentage of the voters there. As she writes, "Thus, while it is absolutely the case that 36% of independents saying that a guilty verdict would move them away from Trump is less than the 44% saying it wouldn't, when your vote total is presently neck and neck and the electoral precedent says it will come down to the wire, you cannot afford to lose anyone, let alone over a third of the gettable votes. That 36% matters greatly. And so, those who are dismissing the electoral consequence of this criminal trial by declaring the events in Manhattan over the next few weeks will merely animate the Trump base, a base that will see this trial as yet more proof of the deep state's persecution of their Lord, are also demonstrating a fundamental misunderstanding of the electoral math. Now, Annette, I'm not loving how you're writing this down. Good for the reading, Bad for the reading alouding, but I read on. Alouding. You cannot mobilize the voters who are already absolutely voting for Trump to any greater heights, no matter how rabid their fury and how bottomless their sense of shared grievance. They only get one vote each, at least until they figure out how to commit the voter fraud they love to decry the, you know, on the broader scale, the rank and file in the tank for the MAGA cannot become more impactful. So it's important to remember that this is really an election interference trial with a crucial trifecta of sex, money, and voter deception. So yes, the public opinion data is one way to understand the influence. And in fact, it points towards the case of being quite consequential. But the larger, as yet, unquantifiable element of this criminal lawsuit currently playing out in the long midst of a presidential election is the story it transmits. The trial is a long-awaited step towards accountability for a presidential candidate publicly performing the role of criminal defendant, sitting reluctantly before a jury of other Americans. This telegraphs a very loud tale about him, and more importantly, the stakes of this election. We don't yet understand the effect that part will have on the voters. It hasn't happened yet. There's more there. I've shared this article. Annette Schenker Asario, you want to know who helps to influence my thought process? A lot of her writing and research. These are the smart people behind the scenes. Ron, be a smart one. Hold tight. You'll be next in the queue. Be after Ron at 844-967-2789. Hope you're dying for more Devil's Advocates. Friday, Burn It Down edition.
Devil's Advocates know how to kick ass and chew bubblegum, and we're all out of bubblegum.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, light my fire.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates. It's the Burn It Down Friday edition. I know it's a little too soon. That's why I'm doing it. The Trump jury has been seated. They've been impaneled. That will be one of the stories I discuss with my little buddy. Also, a person has caught themselves on fire outside the courthouse. I would say mission accomplished, although I've been corrected at least a couple times via the text line at 844-967-2789 that this person reportedly has not passed. So sorry to give you bad information. You can always join us. Correct the record, if you will. I love that. I love when people do that. Please correct the record. 844-967-2789. Ron from Madison, appreciate your patience. You're next. What do you got for us?
Hey, Crudy. I wanted to call in and agree with Bob. You never really know what you're capable of until the moment calls for it. Having said that, I'd like to think that I would do, you know, if someone was threatening, if somebody was threatening my daughter, my wife, that I would get in between them and try to save them.
I suspect you would, Ron. You know, what if it was a stranger on the street, though? I observed this one time. We're in the city of Milwaukee. It was like bar time, Summerfestin', coming back from Summerfest, and some guy was just lighting up his wife in a minivan, and she was sitting in the passenger seat stoically. And he's just yelling at her, going off. And my wife stuck her head in the window like she's going to pull this lady out of the van. And I'm thinking, hey, you know, I know you got all this liquid courage in you, honey. And I appreciate you trying to be there. But would you do it for a stranger, Ron?
I jumped into a river once to pull somebody out who was having a hard time.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Stranger or acquaintance or friend?
Nobody I knew.
Well,
I knew.
Do you feel like even in retrospect, did that take a little more courage? I mean, it's one thing to do for someone you love and someone you care about, but would you make the ultimate sacrifice or put yourself in that harm's way, knowing that jumping in a river, you know, would you do it for a stranger or someone not known to you at that moment? And apparently the answer is yes, Ron.
I didn't think about it. I just did. And I think that's what Bob was trying to say was, you never think about it. You never think it through. You just act. And that's, you know, that was the situation I was in. I was 17 at the time, and I was not a strong swimmer.
Yeah.
But I did it anyway.
Ryan, you got more courage than probably me and a lot of people listening. Appreciate you sharing your story. I always remember, and I'm not comparing you, Ryan, but I always remember when Donald Trump used to claim, you know, I'd like to think I'd run into, it was always a school shooting or something. Trump was always going to be the brave one running in there without a gun, taking on the guy with the AR-15. And it always struck me as such false courage when Trump claimed it through his bravado, because I know when the rubber hit the road, he was a draft dodger. And as a guy who did serve the country, I always felt it very ironic that military sorts and people in, you know, that had worn a badge or worn a uniform would possibly support a guy like Donald Trump. Because you know guys like him. And you know there's no courage there. Appreciate those that shared their stories. I'll drag Dom into this. Perhaps he joins in just a minute. Let me update you about the Wisconsin delegation. There is a big vote going on. Could cost Speaker Mike Johnson his gavel. But there is support amongst the Republicans in the Wisconsin delegation for this foreign policy aid. And the House is poised this weekend to send billions of dollars in aid to allies abroad after months of inaction. And Wisconsin lawmakers on Capitol Hill appear receptive to the latest plan. The plan is they're going to break it into multiple parts so you can object to certain parts of the plan and still vote for the greater overall plan. That seemingly is the gist of this. The $95 billion proposal from House Speaker Mike Johnson would provide military assistance to Ukraine and Israel, reinforce defenses for Taiwan, and provide humanitarian and aid to civilians in Gaza. The legislation is similar to an aid package the Senate passed in February, but it splits the measures into individual bills, one for Ukraine, one for Israel, one for the Indo-Pacific, and a fourth bill that covers other Republican priorities, including provisions to seize Russian assets. And Wisconsin Rep. Mike Gallagher, final act in the Congress, legislation that could ban TikTok in the U.S. If passed, the bills will be combined and sent on to the Senate. Well, they'll send it on, right? Several members of the Wisconsin House delegation this week expressed support for separating the aid packages. Here's a quote, Mark Pocan, my congressman. I personally like it because I've said all along I support Ukraine funding and I had concerns on Israel funding. And now I can express it through a vote. Similarly, Republican Rep. Scotty Fitzgerald indicated to the Journal Sentinel the proposal would give members, including himself, flexibility in their votes. He said he would absolutely vote for support to Israel, but said he was unsure if he would support Ukraine aid, raising concerns about oversight of the funds to the country. He doesn't freaking know. This is Fitzy being Fitzy. This is like a talking point on the right. They all love Putin these days. We cannot take what the U.S. Senate sent over, Fitzy said, of the package. There's no way. We couldn't do it. Republican Brian Stile put it this way. I think having people on the record on the vote is always a good thing. It's going to be the will of the people. I think it's a good opportunity. And the strategy from Johnson set for a Saturday vote in the House, 420, everybody. Well, you're listening to the 420 Eve edition, the Burn It Down Friday edition. Dom's joining right now. Then, Alan Robinson, our sponsor partner from the Herbal Aspect. Find them HerbalAspect.com. Use radio code DEVILRADIO. And also, Peter Barca. He is running for Congress from the 1st CD. That'd be where the aforementioned Brian Stile currently serves. And also where Peter Barca used to serve. He is the former congressman. We've known him from a lot of different roles. Come back. More Devil's Advocates. It's the Friday edition. Gonna burn it down up in here.